said if you got that one, it's a committee member.
No, I'll be your page member of the committee. Thank you very much, honourable members. So over to you, sir.
Chairperson.
Oh, also, you have not introduced.
I have introduced myself. I just want to.
Okay.
Chairperson, according to yesterday's agenda, it was CSIR, HSRC, and then SF and SANSA. And also because we delayed the start of this committee today, Chairperson, can we not, instead of having that break, have the HSRC? I have another committee afterwards, and I wouldn't like to miss that one, but I also don't want to miss out on maximum participation in this committee as well, Chairperson. If that's okay with the rest of the members. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. We'll see how it goes, because we had to amend and change several times due to these meetings also clashing with today's day, the caucus day. So in the main, we don't have meetings on Thursday of portfolio committees. So we unfortunately made to understand that there won't be caucus, and then we scheduled the meeting, then we're told it's caucus. But also the DA had also indicated that they did have caucus and they requested that we start a bit later, so which we did. As I said, we will try our level best. Is HRSC also here? Oh, okay, all right. For now, we're going to take CSIR to make a presentation, followed by ASAF, and then we'll then have questions from members after the two presentations. Okay. Thank you very much. Chairperson?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good afternoon to everyone. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Yes, thank you for giving us a chance and an opportunity to present our annual report. With me here, I've got the executive team of the CSIR. As you pointed out, the term of office of our previous CEO, Dr. CBC, ended on the 30th of September. So holding the fort is Dr. Mlifi Mutugo, who is on my left. He is the acting CEO at the moment. And I must perhaps say that the arrangements for having someone taking over after Dr. CBC are well underway, and we hope that soon we will have someone taking over permanently. I think without any further ado, perhaps I will just allow the executive members please to introduce themselves in keeping with the spirit of the House, maybe starting with the CEO, just a brief interview.
Mlifi Mutugo, currently the group executive responsible for research and development, and I'm here today as the acting CEO. Thank you.
Rachel Chikwamba, I'm the group executive responsible for strategic alliances and communication. And if the chair may allow very briefly, I'd like to thank members of the committee for the well wishes they sent me when I was hurt in an accident. Thank you very much.
Afternoon, I'm Lawrence Luther. I'm the CSIR Group Executive for Operations.
Good afternoon, honourable members. My name is Chris Sturdy. I'm the CFO at CSIR.
Good afternoon. I'm Reynolds Zondo, and I'm the Group Executive for Shared Services.
Sorry about that. My name is Okni Mabunda. I'm the board secretary and the head of legal services.
Good afternoon. My name is Nobundu Chem. I'm the head of human resources at CSIR.
Good morning. My name is Lutando Ziba. I am the head of human capital development at CSIR.
You're not audible. Can you please speak to the mic?
Good afternoon. My name is Thabo Fowe, the Group Manager, Internal Audit Services.
Apologies for that. Good afternoon. My name is Thabo Fowe, the Group Manager, Internal Audit Services.
That is the team chair, and I will hand over to the CEO for the presentation.
Hi, I'm Zaid Kimi. I'm the head of planning at the CSIR.
Up front, you must be very careful that you might be mistaken for Habib, and then you are attacked. That you are responsible for FISMA's fault. I also invite you can stand up at leisure and have and take a couple of chairs.
Good afternoon again. Chair, I will go straight to the core of the presentation, but briefly how the presentation is structured. We'll briefly just give you an overview of the CSR, and section two will pretty much talk to the numbers, and this is specifically our key. Sorry, we seem to have a problem with the presentation, so it's not in a manner that we have organized it and the format, so we might not be able to maybe play some of our slides, so we'll indicate when we reach there. But to save time, maybe I should continue. I'll be able to talk to most of the slides. Okay? The first part is basically the overview. I'm not going to spend too much time on that. Second part is our key performance indicators, and specifically these are the numbers. And we have trends to support those numbers. But the numbers alone are not adequate really to illustrate the breadth and depth of our scientific activities. So we have selected some few interventions to really demonstrate that. And at that point, that's item three, I'll ask some of my colleagues who are very close to some of those interventions to briefly talk to that, and then to allow time for questions and answers. We are really guided by national plans and strategies, and in this regard, we are guided by the National Development Plan. We cannot address everything possible in the National Development Plan, so in some instances, we directly support those key areas, and in some instances, indirectly support that. So in our presentation, we will be demonstrating. Those key areas where we directly support the national plans and strategies in this regard, our support to the economy and employment, we are often asked, how are we supporting the triple challenge of unemployment, poverty, and inequality? And some of these interventions are specifically to address that. Building a capable state, economic and social infrastructure, human settlement, transition to a low-carbon economy, building safer communities, as well as improving health. And these are also in line with our objectives. As you are fully aware, our core business is R&D, but we do not just do R&D for the sake of R&D. We do R&D to foster scientific and industrial development, and we do not do that alone. We partner with higher education institutions, higher research and other research and technology organizations, government departments, industry, communities. We do that to improve the quality of life of all South Africans. Secondly, we do focus a lot on human capital development and transformation, and we endeavor to be financially sustainable. And as the chair indicated, you had interactions with the Auditor General. Good governance is a priority of the organization. Just the CSR at a glance, we are 71 years old this year. We have a total staff of about 2,700. Of that, 1,900 are what we call science, engineering, and technology-based. This is the core of the organization. These are our scientists. And of that core, of the said base, 343 have PhDs. This is an area that we'd like to improve a great deal. We have done international benchmarking. The number is on the lower side, and we endeavor to increase that number in the next 4 to 5 years. So aggressively we'll be working with the Department of Science and Technology to make sure that we do contribute to the organization, but nationally on the number of people with PhDs. At the moment, we are a 2.7 billion rand organization. About 2 years ago, we were so excited to be a 2 billion organization. That comes with a lot of challenges, complexities. How much can you sustain the growth? Is the growth organic growth? And you will see when we project the trends that this has been an organic growth, and we are happy that we'll be able to maintain that. Also to maintain the key performance areas associated with that growth. Publications, this is a composite indicator. In the publication equivalence, we count the number of journals that we publish, number of publications at conferences, the books that we write, the chapters that we write in those books, and later on we will disaggregate that composite score. It is a good indicator from the benchmarking exercise, but you can always improve. This is just the key performance indicators at the glance. I need to emphasize that these key performance indicators do not by any means really indicate our performance broadly. These key performance indicators is what we find with the minister to be measured on, we report on, but we measure more than this. We do have companies that we spin out, we have enterprises that we support, we work with communities, and the manner in which the annual report is structured does not allow to have that comprehensive reporting. Hence, we chose some of those examples to really reflect on our breadth and depth. So when we look at our scientific and technical outputs, this is the core of what we do, and we reflect that on publication equivalents, journal articles, new technology demonstrators, patents, contract R&D, royal and license income. Journal articles, we are referring to peer-reviewed publications, and the peer review really is an indicator of quality. When we say peer review, it's reviewed by peers in the area, so it talks to quality. There we have met our target. New technology demonstrators, we develop a lot of technologies, so at some point in the development of the technology, about 50%, then we assess the maturity of the technology. It's closer to commercialization. At that point, we give a status of a technology demonstrator. So really, it is an indicator of our technological pipeline and maturity of some of the technologies. Not all these technologies will make it to the market, but at that point, it require us to have special interventions to make sure that we translate those technologies either to market-ready products, as we'll indicate later on. There we have met our target. Patents granted, we have met our target, but I need to indicate that patents are very cyclical. It's a measure, we measure that, but we should be aware that even not every year you'll be able to meet your target. Like as we speak, we have patents that are under evaluation that maybe we might count next year. In some instances, there will be us. You have really exceeded your target a lot. But it's because some of these are very cyclical. Contract R&D really is a measure of our relevance. There was exceeded our target. Royalty and income is exploitation of our IP. Slightly behind. Actually, the EMBA was meant to be on the royalty and income licensing. There I'll ask Chris, who's our CFO, just to talk to that particular indicator. Chris?
Thank you, Mlefi. Royalty and license income amounts to a small percentage of our total income. We had targeted 7 million out of the 2.7 billion. But typically you license a product and you receive royalties based on the revenue stream that the licensee generates. With the economic downturn that we experienced the past year, a lot of our licensees were able to generate less sales than they had projected, hence a lower royalty to CSR. Another example was we do seed clones that we license to nurseries, and they then sell them on. With the drought that we experienced in the country, there were less planting of seeds or seed clones, hence a lower royalty stream to CSR. We will look to pick it up in the future, but it was very much an economic reality that we suffered there.
On learning and growth, we pretty much talk to human capital development and transformation. Of the engine of the organization, the science and technology base, which is 1.9, 59% of that is black South Africans, and 35% of that is female South Africans. 18% of the total staff, they do have PhD. And this is the area that we like to improve. Just to give you an example, when we benchmark the CSR with other international organizations, and it's for different reasons why we are below. For instance, if you take KIST in Korea, they are sitting at around 70%. You take CSR in India at 45% and CSIRO at 30-something. CSR at 18% is on the lower side. And this is not only the problem for CSR, it's the problem of the system. And it talks to all sorts of things, to mentorship, working with universities, and I'm glad that the chairs from higher education institutions, and we'll continue to engage on that, as well as the DST. So it is something that we all need to put our heads together and resources to make sure that we address this problem. Strategic objectives on the financial side, we have exceeded our targets, but I want my colleagues Chris and Reynolds to talk to the investment in property, plant, and equipment. It might seem like we have exceeded our target a lot, but here it is investment that went into our Center for Higher Performance Computing, but also some of the infrastructure programs that we have at the CSR, specifically to assist industry to be competitive.
Thanks, Malefi. Just to run through those targets, investment in PPE, we had a target of 113 million. We achieved 308 million. Of that, 120 million rand was an upgrade to our Center for High Performance Computing, where we received specific funding for that. Our total income grew by 13% to just under 2.7 billion rand. I think 13% top line growth in the current economic climate was very good. Net profit increased by 12% to 59 million. And then our BBBE rating, we maintained level 2. And thankfully, we're fortunate to have a very low disabling injury frequency rate of 0.1 against a target of 0.3.
This last, we're meant to be showing the past 10-year trend so that we can contextualize our performance to date. I'm not sure if we'll be able to do the trends. It is you have that in your pack, but basically it illustrated organic growth, about 10% growth year on year. It is sustainable, and we're confident that we'll be able to maintain those trends. We use these trends also to set targets for the next financial year. Actually, we set targets in a 3-year cycle, and we review those targets annually. So I will skip those trends. Now, this talk to specifically the numbers. To really demonstrate the impact of our work, we have selected few interventions. I'll talk to the first two, and I'll ask my colleagues then thereafter to speak to the rest. On the economy and employment, and here when we are asked to support the triple challenge of unemployment, poverty, and inequality, in the past 3 years, we developed dedicated programs. And on the economy, and I'm glad that some portfolio members did join us for the launch of the Nanotechnology Industrial Development Facility, as well as the Biomanufacturing Industry Development Center. Let me talk to the BIDC, which was launched by the minister this year in April. And honorable members might recall last year we brought some presents to the members. Most of those presents came from entities that we supported in this facility. This facility, we partnered with the National Treasury under the Jobs Fund, the DST, to really set up a facility where we will have the requisite skills to take ideas to commercial market-ready products. So it is a research facility at the beginning, and it moves through to all the stages that are required to take products to industrial scale. It's a massive facility that took us about 2 years to build. In there, we have the skills, we incubate businesses, we take people who at some point they are manufacturing their products from their kitchens, from their garages, and we take them through the whole process, even training them on the processes themselves. By the time they leave the program, they have market-ready products, but also equipped with business skills. So there we have supported 19 enterprises. 10 of those enterprises were black women, and 16 of those were black-owned. Out of that, we transferred 42 market-ready products. Some of them we shared with you. We've created 125 permanent jobs, temporary employment 180. We trained about 180 beneficiaries, trained some interns. And what was nice about the interns, one of the interns actually established his own business, and he's still being supported in the program to do that. Now, what is the key question here? We have demonstrated that this program is successful. For us, it's to massify this. And you'll quickly realize that actually what is required here, in addition to the scientific support, actually is the business. The involvement of the Department of Trade and Industry, the involvement of small business, and this is where we're asking our own department also to assist us to have strategic partnerships with those departments. For us, we want to massify this program. When you ask us about how many jobs, we say this is a good program, but what we require is the expansion and massification of this program. This is the second one also launched by the minister last year in December. Here, we're taking our nanoclays and utilizing the nanoscience and nanotechnology, we are able to create high-value products. Many people can say, we have clays. What is the difference? By now, using nanotechnology, we are able to add more value to those clays. In this case, we are working with Amka, which is our second largest pharmaceutical. We have about 7 products that are being tested by Amka. If I need to give an example, we all use roll-ons. Most of those roll-ons, they did have this whitish after effect. Incorporating nanoclays, you are able to address that problem. We do have a roll-on which has been tested by Amka to that effect. We do have a Vaseline that we have produced with Amka. We are working with a local company, Greenfields, to be able to set up industrial scale nano production facility in the country. We have been with them for a year now. We anticipate in the next year or so there'll be a standalone entity producing nanoclays. Here, this is where we are producing new industries in the country. The previous one, bioscience industry, is at very infancy, and the challenge there is to translate biosciences research activities into market-ready products. I'll give you a story, actually, this in a previous slide, where we work with a company called Elvima. They are producing Moringa fortified porridge. When they came to us, they used to produce kilograms and contract other people to produce that Moringa porridge for them. They did not understand anything about the process. As we speak today, after graduating from the program, they have supplied 10 African countries with Moringa 45 porridge to a tune of 500 tons. They supplied 350 tons locally of Moringa 45 products. They have started producing Moringa tea, supplied 150 tons. They just received funding, I think it's from IDC. They've just established their manufacturing facility somewhere in Gauteng to fully be independent. They are employing about 31 people. What impressed me about that company, they have all the structures of a huge organization. They have a financial manager, qualified, BCom, HR manager, all the structures that we need, and this company is not more than 3 years old. And those are the successes of this program that we want to massify. Let me end there, and you can hear my passion when I talk about this program, so let me allow my other colleagues ready to come on board. Thank you.
All right, and this particular intervention speaks to the work that we do with lasers, and it looks at supporting those industries that have got high maintenance costs as part of their operations. Eskom is one industry, is one such industry, where they use moving parts, where they have turbine blades that tend to get corroded over time. In fact, speaking to Eskom, they say that it costs them billions of rands to send those pieces of equipment overseas to be repaired. And it also really gives them a lot of downtime and takes away reliability from operations when their equipment is not working. Our laser cladding technology allows us to go there and fix their equipment. In cases, we fix it in situ so that they don't have to send it anywhere. We also have saved them some costs fixing their power, the cooling tanks at Quebec, without them having to incur any costs associated with downtime. So that is some of the work that we do that saves our industry downtime, improves reliability, and saves costs in terms of laser technologies. The next intervention speaks to how we support the nation to build a capable state, in particular looking at our municipalities. And we focus on two challenges in this particular case. The first one was one of efficient service delivery. People log calls to the municipality, and people would like to see that when they call the city fathers, people respond and they come and they fix the challenges. We designed a web-based technology to help the municipalities to improve their turnaround times. They can track what calls and complaints have been logged. They can make sure that the calls are addressed, and they can make sure that they are addressed efficiently. This was done in Amatole, in the Eastern Cape, just as but one example. We also have challenges of poor security, cyber security challenges, and inversions of networks is a major problem for municipalities. And we have assisted in this respect, sending our cyber security experts to really analyze their network systems, look at all the vulnerabilities, and help them to fortify themselves against hacking. So we used ethical hacking to test, to stress test their systems and help them to improve them. I think I will end there and ask Lutando to speak to some of our environmental interventions under economic and social infrastructure.
Thank you, Chair. I think this work in particular highlights the value of robust science to provide solutions, particularly in rural, resource-limited environments. The work that was done here by the CSR basically uses algae-based treatment of wastewater, like works, and the work was done at Sekukune District Municipality in Limpopo. And it is a non-conventional approach to improving water quality and ensure that water that comes, for instance, from wastewater treatment works doesn't flow to the rivers with high levels of pathogens. And the technology has demonstrated that it is actually working very well, and our hope is that we can replicate this to other smaller municipalities where there are limited resources, where there are limited skills, because it is a much simpler technology. You introduce these treated bacteria into the system, and they consume other pathogens like E. coli, and they also change the pH of the water in such a way that it is not suitable for these other pathogens that are actually causing a lot of diseases in our communities. So we are hoping that uptake of this technology and expansion of this work into other municipalities will help us reduce some of the waterborne diseases in areas where we have struggled with upkeep of infrastructure and ability to maintain wastewater treatment works. Thank you, Chair.
The National Cleaner Production Center is an initiative of the Department of Trade and Industry, hosted by the CSIR, It's aimed at improving energy efficiency in industry. And since 2010, the work that we have done here has contributed to savings of 1.5 billion rand. In the last year, we've achieved 75 million rand more savings and identified a further 232 million worth of potential savings through better efficiencies, more cost energy efficient equipment and so on in this company. Next slide. As you are all aware, South Africa faces a threat to one of our important natural resources, namely rhino, and the CSIR has been working with Sandparks and the Department of Environmental Affairs to combat this scourge, and we're applying some of the technology we've developed over many years in the defense and security environment, including radar sensors, optronic sensors, as well as situational awareness. And I think this time, this year, for the first time, we are seeing a slight decrease in the number of rhino poaching in the Kruger Park. So there's still a lot of work to be done, but we are working with Sandparks to bring that down. Next slide. As you are aware, I'm sure the CSIR has a long-standing history of working with the Department of Defense and the various arms of service to help maintain and improve their capability to do border protection, to help South Africa fulfill its role in peacekeeping in Africa and to look after our maritime resources. The particular slide here speaks about something called electronic warfare, which is a countermeasure to radar, and this is an area where the CSIR group is among the top 10 in the world. And what they have essentially done here is they've built a flying laboratory in which you can rapidly test new types of technologies. So we are looking at commercializing this technology both for our own defense force but also for international export opportunities for the industry.
This intervention speaks to improving challenges in health. Specifically, it addresses two things. It addresses reducing mortality of infants, and it addresses decongesting the healthcare system. So the technology we developed is a portable ultrasound gadget, which you can take around with you to test women who are pregnant to see if babies are small and healthy or if babies are small and sick. So by being able to distinguish small healthy babies from small sick babies, you are able to not refer too many people upward to the district level, and in that way you decongest the system. But importantly, we improve mortality in the sense that we can detect very early on the babies that are small and in distress, and we can really make sure that they are referred upward and they receive the relevant care. We have taken a long time to develop this technology simply because approval of medical devices, approval that is recognized by the WHO, takes a long time. We have since received our CE mark, which is the European standard that is used for approved gadgets. We have taken this into broader field testing in the Western Cape and in Tshwane. And early data shows that mortality rates where we use this technology are almost half compared to where we don't have this technology at the primary healthcare level. So it's a highly promising technology, and we believe when it's fully rolled out, it will do a lot to improve infant mortality.
Colleagues, this intervention deals with the problem of urbanization. Gauteng is one of the most heavily urbanized provinces, and it's expected that the population of Gauteng will grow to somewhere in the region of 19 million people by 2030. What we're doing here is trying to understand how housing demand grows and what sort of housing demand will grow and what the current stock is. And we've developed a housing demand model for the Gauteng provincial government, which allows them to more accurately plan and understand where the backlogs will occur and what the scale of backlogs are and what they need to do to ensure that we can supply adequate housing to all people in Gauteng. This sort of product, once we've refined it, will then make available to all other provinces and municipalities together with satellite data that will allow every municipality and province in South Africa to compile similar long-term plans to support the delivery of housing.
One of the things that we've been encouraged by the Minister of Science and Technology is to use our capabilities and our reputation built over the past 70 years to support development on the continent and to support NEPAD's intentions to improve African economies to innovation economies by 2063. So as part of that, where appropriate, we take our technologies and we replicate them across the continent. The examples that are given here look at some important challenges that we are addressing. The first one looks at a technology that detects in real time really economically important diseases and allows for interventions such as quarantine, limited movement of livestock and so on. And it's a diagnostic technology that is in a van and it can be used to drive around, do the diagnostics, immediately send information to decision makers, providing decision support that is important for the livestock industry, especially where these two diseases, foot and mouth and brucellosis, are concerned. So that's a SADC region project. Again, we have in another sector, different sector now, renewable energy intervention, where we look to the energy supply mix of the future, and we work with power systems within the region to help them to integrate renewable energies as a source of power into their energy mix. Finally, the last intervention that we're citing today looks at one of our old capabilities in the development of road materials and paving technologies, where our engineers are helping the Tanzanian road authorities. In fact, this work is also happening in Mozambique, and we are the node of a forum of many countries that are looking to improve highways across the continent to improve regional integration. This specific example speaks to the work that we're doing with Tanzania's road authorities to develop new asphalt guidelines to counter high incidence of premature pavement failures, so that roads are not invested in today and 5 years later they are full of potholes and broken and the resources have been wasted. So this is but a sampling of our interventions on the continent. And in fact, if you look at the cover of our annual report this year, there is a map of Africa on the cover, which says we are South African, but we are African, and we will use those capabilities to improve the quality of life of South Africans first, but also of people on the continent. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, colleagues and honorable members. This takes us to the end of our presentation. That is our story.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ted Blanche, we're going to take the next presentation and then we will, okay, you'll be the first on the list. Okay. Can we have Asaf to present?
Thank you. didn't bring along an adapter. I assume that they have all the password.
The password.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, okay. And the charger, ne? The charger also. Yeah. Yeah, but we have to have all vision dedicated. Yeah. Next time, keep on in the jacket. One day, a couple of lights are off my bag. It's very nice.
Huh?
It's very nice.
Come on.
Why are they doing this again? Why are they doing this again? The back-to-back.
If we have it on the screen, we can continue because we do have the presentation with us.
Right. Honourable Chair, thank you for this opportunity. We have a very small delegation. I'd like to introduce myself. I'm the Executive Officer of the Academy. My name is Roseanne Dyer, and I have with me our Financial Manager, Marikeng Chawani. I would like to apologize. We do not have a member of our council who was able to be present. All our council members are senior members of university executives and were just unable to attend today. So there's just two of us. So we go from the very large to the very small. So I'm going to proceed.
Austerity measures crops in automatically.
I'm going to skip through many of the slides, taking heed of what you said in the beginning, Honourable Chair, but I would like to go to the second slide, which talks about the mandate of ASIF, and to remind members that ASIF is distinguished from the other entities in the science system by the fact that we're membership-based, and to say that we have a dual mandate. The first is to honour distinguished scholars in all fields of scientific inquiry, and the second is to generate evidence-based solutions to national and global challenges. I'm not sure why this is not coming up, but should I just proceed? So we've got a number of slides that follow after the mandate. The next one I'd highlight is ASIF strategic goals. We've got five goals that have remained unchanged over the last couple of years, and I don't think I need to remind members of these. They're the same as they have been for some time. We then have a couple of slides where what we've done is align our activities with government goals. Those are the DST grant challenges and government priorities, and we've slotted in all our activities to see how they align. But the slides that I want to focus on are the ones where we talk about ASIF's contributions to the triple challenges of the National Development Plan. So there's a slide that's labeled, I think it's slide number 8, it's called Direct Contributions to the Triple Challenges. It's a table that has the three triple priorities of poverty, inequality, and unemployment there, and just to highlight what we're doing to address those triple challenges. So in terms of addressing poverty alleviation, we have a committee, a standing committee on science for the reduction of poverty and inequality, and it's been undertaking a number of activities in relation to poverty, and I'll mention those a little bit later. In terms of inequality, a key priority for us is the transformation of SF's membership in terms of race and gender particularly, but also in terms of institutional distribution. And then another contribution is we try the best we can to ensure that the membership of our various standing committees is fully representative of the demographics of the country. In terms of unemployment, not very much at the moment, other than transferring skills to our interns. The next slide shows the indirect contributions to the triple challenges. So in terms of poverty, the past year we've been doing a lot of planning for a conference that we're going to be hosting in November this year, which is the annual meeting of the African Science Academies, and we're going to have the theme of that as poverty reduction. In terms of inequality, the values of ASIF, as enunciated in our constitution, embrace fully the constitution of South Africa. Then there's a slide on the significant developments over this past cycle, and I'd like to highlight some of them. So this year, ASIF celebrates its 20th anniversary, and we've had a number of anniversary celebrations. At the end of March, we had a membership of 470 members, and we had a record number of reports published this past year. We published three consensus studies and three workshop proceedings reports. The next major achievement is in terms of Cielo South Africa, which is our open access platform. And members will remember that what we're doing with the open access platform is uploading South African scholarly journals. And we currently have 62 scholarly titles on the open access platform linked to the Web of Science. So these are available globally for anyone to access free of charge. We've undertaken many studies that are aligned to the NDP's triple challenges and government goals. Our collaboration with African and overseas academies has really strengthened over the past year. We hosted a major conference in February this year. It was the Inter-Academy Partnership Conference. This is the global network of science academies, and the theme for that conference was science advice. So it was a very topical theme on evidence-based advice to government. And then finally, this past year, we've conducted our five-year institutional review, and that report is currently available. I'm then going to go through the achievements of each of the programs, but I'm going to focus on the tables that come under each of them. But perhaps just to focus on one slide before I get to the table, which is about our membership, because I know this is something that the committee is always interested in. So at the end of March, so this is the figure that has, it looks like a circle. We had 470 members. In the past year, we elected 31 new members. 25% of our membership is women, and 28% is black. And members will know that we're continually striving to increase and improve the participation of both women and blacks in our membership. Then to go to the table one, where we report on our performance indicators. And you can see that we've achieved all our targets in terms of governance, the number of meetings of council and that we were going to hold. In terms of our targets for transformation of our membership. We had a performance of 25% women and 28% of black members, so we have achieved those targets and we continue to increase those every year. The awarding of the Science for Society gold medals, we had a target of 2, but we only awarded 1 in the past year, so we did not achieve that target, but that was a decision that was taken by the committee that there were not other eligible people to be awarded that that gold medal this year, primarily because we look at both excellence and service to society. It's a dual criteria, and the service to society was not articulated well enough in the applications. In terms of the number of regions hosting public lectures, what we're striving to do is to increase the breadth of coverage in the country, and we did exceed our target in that respect there. Then in terms of the second program, which is on communication and public awareness, I'm going to table 2, and here what you can see is that we have really been working hard to market the Academy through media releases, through the Science for Society newsletter, through the publication of our evidence-based study reports. And you can see that in all cases we either exceeded the target or it was achieved. Particularly in high increases were with the number of media releases, and this was mainly due to increased activities within ASAS. In terms of promotion of public awareness of science, this is mainly through our science magazine. We also exceeded the number of exhibitions that we exhibited at. The next program is our liaison. This is mainly the international liaison program. And we have a number of performance indicators in this program. So I'm going to table number 3 to take you through that. You're going to try and help me get it up. Thank you. We're nearly at the end. I'm on table 3, which is our liaison program, and you can see there that the first performance indicator is related to the number of meetings and workshops that we hold together with other African science academies. We had a planned target of only 1, but in fact our performance was 8, and the main reason for that is due to the external funding that we managed to raise during the past year, and we were able to hold a number of very important meetings, and perhaps the most significant one to highlight perhaps the most significant one to highlight is the workshop that we held on capacity development for science advice for African scientists together with our IAP conference. Another performance indicator we have is related to our number of young scientists conference. We have a really strong initiative to try to encourage young scientists, and as you know, we host the South African Young Academy of Science, and we managed to hold 2 young scientists conferences in this year as opposed to our normal 1. Then we also try to promote young scientists by encouraging them to participate in international meetings. So wherever there are opportunities for us to nominate young scientists, we do so. and we are normally very successful, and so they attend events, international events, such as the Lindau Nobel Laureate Program. ASIF is the DST a partner for that, and we nominate young scientists. They travel to Lindau, where they have an opportunity to interact with Nobel laureates. We nominate them for the Inter-Academy Medical Panel, Young Physicians Leaders Program, and so on. So there were many, many opportunities for that. Then we also host the Organization for Women in Science for the Developing World National Chapter, and we try to encourage women scientists and provide them with a platform to interact nationally and internationally. And one of our targets was to increase the membership of that organization, and we exceeded that by a very, very large margin. So clearly we have to revise our annual target there. And then the number of Women for Science events that we hosted also were greater. The next program that we have is our policy advisory program. And this is where we provide the evidence-based scientific advice in support of policy development through our reports. And I'd just like to perhaps highlight some of the studies that are underway very quickly. So our health studies are listed there. I'm not going to read through, but you can see that they're quite diverse in nature. The one at the top has been completed. The others are still underway. Then we also do work in the field of biosafety and biosecurity, and the report on the state of biosafety and biosecurity was published in this last year. Also do work in energy and environment. The state of green technologies was published in the previous year, but we're still disseminating the findings of that. And the report on the technical readiness to support hydraulic fracturing has just recently been launched. Then there are studies in the field of education, humanities, and poverty. And perhaps just to highlight the one on poverty, where we had a workshop on measuring human deprivation to promote human development. So when you come to look at the performance table, there are a number of performance indicators there. We measure ourselves both on the number of study proposals that we submit to council for approval, the number that we submit to funders, the number of consensus study reports published, the number of workshops reports published, and policymakers' booklets and statements. So we exceeded the target for the first four, and perhaps of most significance is the number of consensus study reports, because these are very in-depth, lengthy reports. They take sometimes 18 months to 2 years to complete. We didn't do any policymakers' booklets or statements this past year. That was primarily as a result of the decision taken by the standing committees that were in charge of our projects. In terms of publications, we manage the South African Journal of Science, and we also manage and produce Quest, the science magazine. I'll just say a word about the South African Journal of Science, because this is a journal that's really leading the way in South African scholarly publishing in terms of e-publishing, and we're supporting many of the scholarly journals in South Africa with assistance. And it's going from strength to strength. And we've just recently introduced Altmetrics, where we monitor the downloads of individual articles rather than of the journal itself. So it's a better indicator. Our Quest Science magazine, this is an infographic just summarizing where it's distributed by province, the number of exhibitions and events that we've exhibited at, and also the number of issues, so it captures it just in one slide. The next slide I don't need to dwell on. I've mentioned we've produced all that. Scholarly publishing, this is a program that's really making a major intervention, and I would like to perhaps highlight what it's doing with the open access platform for South African scholarly journals. And you can see there how the number of titles has increased on the platform from 51 in March 2015 to 62 in 2016, and the number of visits to the site. And then the next few slides just highlight the activities of this program, but perhaps let's just go to table 6, where we are measuring ourselves on a number of indicators, and to indicate that all of them are contributing towards improving the visibility and the quality of South African scholarly publishing. So there are a number of interventions, and if I could just take, for example, the hosting of an annual National Scholarly Editors Forum, where we bring together all the editors of South African scholarly journals, normally attended by up to 110 people, and we talk about issues related to improving the editorship of scholarly magazines, of scholarly journals. My apologies. So I think that's the end of that, and I'd like to now turn to my financial manager, who can say something about the finances.
Thank you, Roseanne. Honorable Chair and honorable members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity. We are tabling here, I would say, a brief synopsis of our audited financial statements. I know that members of the committee did receive a full copy of our audited report, and therefore here, for the sake of time, I'm going to just talk to our statement of financial performance as well as financial position. With regard to our statement of financial performance, for the year ended 31st March 2016, we reported a deficit of just below 6.2 million. There were a number of reasons for that. Just to mention a few, it was compliance requirements that are upon ASAF. The change in accounting framework from GAAP to GRAP, as is required by National Treasury, that in itself brought financial strain to already distressed ASAF financial resources. The hosting of ICSU ROA, as well as the hosting of an IAP international conference. Those were some of the reasons that contributed to this situation. We covered the deficit from the reserves that ASAF had. Unfortunately, that has, I would say, to a large extent, almost wiped out the reserves that ASAF had. And the unfortunate part is that we were actually keeping those reserves in order to enable or consider the possibility of ASAF acquiring its own office premises. As members of the committee know that ASAF operates from rented premises. Unfortunately, that means that we have taken a fall with regard to that. Moving to our statement of financial position, members would have noticed that there hasn't been much movement with regard to that. ASAF remains a fairly small entity insofar as when you look at its budget in comparison to other entities. And of course, ASAF continues to encounter or operate within very stringent financial constraints. We do understand the climate that we find ourselves in, but it is just that we've been having very difficult position in terms of trying to make ends meet with the kind of allocation that ASAF is exposed to currently. The other slide talks to statement of cash flow as well as a statement of net assets, and I'm not going to dwell into those. I'll ask
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That concludes our presentation.
Thank you very much for the presentation. We would then ask honourable members to pose questions and indicate on whether it's CSIR or ASAF on the questions. Honourable Teplanki, you first. Honourable Paulson, Honourable Leptrick, Honourable Goronoff. In that order.
Thank you. I've got a question for the CSIR. I just want to know about the asphalt that you are using to that you are assisting Tanzania with. Is the same technology available for South Africa? And if so, where are you using it? In which provinces? Because in the rural provinces where I travel from and where I hail from, tarred roads, or where used to be tarred roads, are now gravel roads. And as much as I am for assisting our neighbours, I believe charity begins at home. And much of our revenue, or your revenue, comes from either the public sector or from Parliament. And I believe that we should assist our own country first. Thank you.
And there is great improvement in those roads in Dar es Salaam. I can attest to that. Honourable Paulson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentations. First questions go to CSIR, and congratulations on your clean audit. You've got six research impact areas, and you've actually mentioned research products in all of them. You also have zero fruitless and wasteful expenditure. You do, however, have one performance target that you did not achieve, the one for income from royalties. Instead of 7.4 million, you only managed to get 5.2 million. So what are you going to do to make up for that 2.2 million? And will we add it onto the new target for the coming year? You have many excellent initiatives, and I think it's great that the work that you do. But how are you communicating this to the public and industry? And also, income from private sector, it's not as a percentage of income from government. I mean, a lot of the work that you do benefits the private sector that can go and create industry and improve their industries. So how much of the income that you have comes from that private sector? Basically, and I think we should always be giving you money so that we can always have control of the work that you do. Make sure that you actually use asphalt here to tar the Northwest as opposed to Tanzania first. So I concur with the honourable member that raised that as well. And then, but thank you very much for your presentation, and once again, well done on your clean audit. And the next is to ASAF now. First, and you know, I can understand being an executive officer, you should have a good salary. But your salary increased by 80% from what it was for the executive officer, from 900 and odd to 1.7 million. I mean, it's almost like a schlaudy situation here. You know, so I just like to have the reason why this massive increase in the executive officer's salary, 80%. I would hate for MPs to get such salaries. I spend so much time spending the money instead of working. So, and the other thing is,
We have a decrease in revenue, and you know, what is being done to ensure that the income improves over the next financial year? And on what basis did you host the South African, or are you hosting the South African Academy of Engineering for free? I mean, we're running at a deficit here, and we're hosting conferences for free. I don't understand the rationale, the logic behind that. But I must say that you do good work. I cannot fault the work that you do. In fact, none of the entities can one fault the work that they do, except to say that we need to get the public to know what it is that you do. 470 members only for such a organization, I would say, if, you know, it's an indication of how popular science is out there. It's not very popular. So I think by disseminating the work that you do, you could, or advertising the work that you do, could get more people interested in science. In addition to that, I'd also, you do a good job of disseminating that work, I think, but how do you measure the impact of that work? I think that ultimately is the most important thing. It's, there has to be social impact of the things that we do as scientists, so that we can see if we're doing the right things. Thank you very much. And I know you do have an unqualified audit with findings, so I suppose it's not so bad, eh? But thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Person. Honourable... it's good.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Just, you know, in my other life, I'm the patron of the Black Mambas anti-poaching team in Balule. The only black woman anti-poaching team in South Africa. And I just want to thank the CSIR for the work they've done in that area, and I can report that it is definitely very successful. Then my question to Asaf, how many people work at the head office? How many staff do you have? And then maybe, you know, if you can give us a little bit more information, you know, about the... You've said that you had an unexpected expense with regard to the Treasury's requirements. But, you know, your general expenses is 23 million. That's fairly high. And, you know, if I can have a little bit more with regard to that. And then lastly, what are you going to do to make your deficit good? Is there any plans, or will you just have a very smaller operating budget for next year?
Honourable Dr. Lutre.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is to the CSIR on slide 16. I would just like to know what is the availability of the web-based technology for the municipalities. Is it generally available for municipalities to contact the CSIR if they are interested in it? And then my question to ASAF, on page 63 of the annual report and the auditors, the independent auditors report, I just want some clarification because I'm slightly confused here. Because it says in terms of the predetermined objectives that it was not audited as the entity does not fall within the ambit of the PFMA. But a bit lower down, the ASIF Act, in terms of compliance with legislation, it says the entity did not in all material aspects comply with Section 2, Sub 2, of the ASIF Act, which requires that the Academy must comply with the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act. So, on the one hand, you have to comply in your own act, but on the other hand, you don't. So, has that been sorted out exactly what's happening there.
Thank you, Honorable Kekan.
Thank you, Chair. Mine, I'm partly covered in that. And let me start by congratulating both the entities for the good job well done. I just want to ask Asaf a few questions. First, I want to know about the progress made in terms of procuring a building, and to understand how many people attended your AGM, how many members attended your AGM, and why of that number. The last one, how much irregular expenditure was incurred, and what corrective actions were instituted? I thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Matale, are you okay? Honorable Tak, fine. Okay. Thanks. I think I also wanted, on the same slide that Dr. Loktrit raised, that slide number for CSIR, slide number 16 on the building a capable state, on mine is more to say, I see it's a smaller municipality, much as it was piloted, but I think the bulk of these logging of complaints are in the metro. So when do you intend rolling out that so that then it deals with those issues? And also on the same slide, the issue of the cyber security, I know that the department had invested $6 million on infrastructure on cyber infrastructure, and I just need to know the any collaboration with telecommunication, because I would have thought that the bulk of it is there, but also they must come to the party. The other one on CSIR, on the improving health, it was presented by Dr. Chikwamba, where on the AmbiFlow, you had said that we conducted the trial in Kraaifontein in the Western Cape and in Tshwane. Just wanted to know where about in Tshwane was it conducted. On the incubation program, I think we did see the young women with the moringa porridge, and that it's being exported, and it's commendable that they already have 10 African countries that they are supplying. It is very commendable. And I think we raised that in our report, the issue of collaboration with small business and trade and industry, and I heard you speaking about it, the trade and industry and small, because I think it is an important partnership and so that those people must grow. I think the Moringa ones were very fortunate, because I think what they lack most is the marketing aspect and all others that you incubate, so that you do it as a project and then hand over to small business and then hand over to trade and industry for them to grow in numbers. The other one, I think it's my last. I also serve in telecommunication committee, and we visited one area here where they, where, you know, the like in international housing of all the connections, and the underground cable, undersea cable, whatever. But I had most of these components, which I thought, when I looked at them, they can't be done here. They, we are told that they import them from France, from Italy, and I said, but I know if you the CSIR, I'm sure, can do this thing, and other entities of science and technology can do this thing. I just want to know the your collaboration with them. I think to both, we would want to have your new commitment in relation to the audit. Much as SAF is not audited by the AG, but would want to have your commitment to improve on the outcomes that is there. And I think the issue of acquiring a building was also asked last year when we presented. So, yeah, let me stop there also in the interest of time. Let's start the responses with CSIR.
Yes, thank you, Honourable Member. I'll ask my colleagues to address some of the questions, starting with the Honourable Ted Blunt on asphalt. I'll ask Zaid to handle that. From Honourable Paulson on income royalties, Chris and communication, what we're doing, our campaigns on communications, ideas that work. Rachel will handle that. Percent income from private sector, Chris will handle that. Thank you, Honourable Kornhoff, on commending our effort on anti-rhino poaching. We'll relay the message to the technical team. They'll be happy to hear that. Also, Honourable Paulson, thank you for the support. We normally don't know how to raise these issues of financial support. I'm happy that it's raised by the Honourable Member. We'll explore that further. Also on slide 16, from Honourable Lotret, to improve our service delivery, same from Honourable Maseko. We'll ask Zaid to handle that. Cyber security, Lawrence will handle that. Ambiflow, Tony, that will be Rachel. And on incubation, I can just indicate that tomorrow we're presenting to the Minister of Science and Technology with the chair specifically on economic development and our effort to support the NDP specifically on the economy. And what we'll be presenting to the minister, actually our industrial development programs, and we'll be putting on the table again the issue of the incubation and the support that we require at the highest level. We do engage with the officials from the department, but the conversation we believe should be handled at a much higher level so that those strategic partnerships could be established. On ICT, I'll ask Lawrence to handle that. And if I've missed any question, kindly remind me so that we address all the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. The question of the asphalt and the roads, we are working with a number of provincial departments on distributing this technology into our local road building. In particular, we've had an experimental road built just outside Durban, which is a high-volume asphalt road, and the current indications are that the technology will be very successful, that it will lead us to build roads that, at about half the cost, last about 50% longer. So there's a lot of work happening with both provincial departments and with SANRAL in expanding this technology into South African roads as well. As far as the service delivery goes, we have the one pilot site on using the web-based technology. We do have an agreement with the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency to bundle some of our technologies and inputs and distribute those on a larger scale to other municipalities. So these will become available, but we have a number of smaller scale interventions which we're trialing in particular municipalities, and we will look towards bundling these and making these available at scale to all South African municipalities.
And if I may tackle the question on communication, on what we are trying to do to improve the profile of the organization. We are increasing our efforts, and our efforts are in two pillars. The first pillar focuses on raising the profile of the CSIR so that the people, including ordinary civilians and citizens, understand who the CSIR is, what they do, and why it matters to the ordinary person. And to that end, we have launched an advertorial campaign. It's called Ideas That Work. In that particular campaign, we give examples of some of the work that we do to protect the country, for example, the work that we do in support of the defense forces. We cite examples of work that we do to support economic infrastructure and the environment. But importantly, we also have components where we showcase some of our very young stars and the work that they do in order to increase the appeal of science to the youths so that they can also be attracted into science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. We have programs where we partner with vernacular language radio stations, where we use our star scientists to speak in science programs in their own native languages so that people can listen and understand who is the CSIR and what does the CSIR do. The second, and actually it's important to then mention that currently our adverts are running. The issue is we don't have as much money as we would like to be able to buy airtime for those adverts. So we use other platforms online, vodcasts, webcasts, and so on, so that we can expand our reach. That's the first part. The second part is creating opportunities for engagement so that it's not a one-way thing where we tell the country who we are and how clever we might be or whatever. We do this by creating opportunities to bring people to the CSIR, to immerse themselves in our work, to look at our workstations, to look at demonstration projects. In communities, there are demonstration projects, but also at the CSIR they are. We have launched several infrastructure, advanced infrastructure, where we invited people from the relevant industries and some members from the portfolio committees support us in those respects, so that people actually come see, touch, feel the work we do. We go out with the DST to schools to talk about the work that we do, demonstrate the things that we also do, and try to encourage youngsters, again, to interact with young scientists from the CSIR and be encouraged to come into science. And finally, I think we have adopted our language policy, and we've adopted two languages. I think we have isiZulu and Northern Sotho, to try and create a lot more collateral in vernacular so that we expand our outreach. And in the areas in which we work with communities, we strive to make sure that we translate high-level brochureware about what the projects are about and what benefit the communities can expect in the vernacular languages in the spaces where our footprint reaches.
Honourable Member Paulson, thank you for your questions. Let me take the royalty income question first. Would I like to see our royalty income higher? Absolutely. It's not through lack of trying. When we did the benchmarking exercise, we found that science councils in the upper end, royalty income equates to roughly 1% of their total income. We are below that at this stage. If you cast our mind back a few years ago, our royalty income was as high as 40, 50 million rand. And that was in a case where the US was at war and we had licensed certain technologies to them for armored vehicle protection. With no boots on the ground, those vehicles are no longer being deployed and hence a low royalty income. So it tends to be haphazard and cyclical. What we are doing to try and increase the royalties, obviously we're pushing as many licenses as possible. We have introduced instant access licensing, makes it easier for people to work with the CSIR and take licenses and assess technology. We also have a big campaign to develop entrepreneurial skills. In other words, make technology available to more people to go out there and build a business around, a technology business around CSIR technology. So I'm more than happy to add this to the target of future budgets to make up the 2 million rand that we missed. But
Yeah, really. We need to diversify income. And that leads to the second question, which is our private sector income. Private sector income locally, 9%. I think you can look at it together with our international income, equates to 16% of our contract income. When you look at that compared to a Fraunhofer, for example, we are very much on the low side. But if you look at Fraunhofer in terms of where they sit, they've got Daimler Chrysler, Siemens on their doorstep, and they work very closely with these large multinationals. A reality we face in South Africa is a large number of the companies who are multinationals, who can afford to invest in R&D, have taken that offshore. However, we do a lot of work with the private sector. A slide was shown for the National Cleaner Production Center, where the impact that we have on their business runs into billions. It doesn't reflect necessarily on our income statement because we don't charge that to them, but we do help affect savings in that space. Again, would I like to see that higher? Absolutely. And there are continued efforts to engage with the private sector, as Rachel said, to communicate, to make them aware of what we have and to work with them. It's part of our mandate in terms of addressing job creation in the country. I hope I've answered your question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. To the questions from the Honourable Maseko, firstly on the work with metros and the problems on cyber security that one experiences in these environments. We work with a number of metros, and with the City of Johannesburg, we are in discussions about setting up a kind of a cyber security hub, and this is based on our existing capability at the national level, where we've worked with the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. Definitely we have the expertise and we can assist other metros with that as well. On the issue of telecommunications equipment, I share the Honourable Member's frustration that so much of this technology is imported, but I should mention that there have been cases where CSIR has developed networking technology that has been commercialized, in particular based on the European Union and DST-funded project around wireless mesh technology. We commercialized that wireless mesh router. This is from our initial focus in ICT has been particularly on rural and other disadvantaged areas. They're often the Western countries don't have the solutions we need, so there's kind of a gap for us to develop unique technology that we can then export and so on. We are also supporting some research at the University of Nelson Mandela Bay on optical networking, and we believe in the future maybe some of the innovations there can go underground in some of those places you've seen. Lastly, I want to mention, I think we all know about 3G and 4G. Well, the next thing is 5G. CSIR has just contributed 3 members to ICASA's 5G forum, so we are working with ICASA on the regulation issues, but we are also in discussions with Finnish and other international companies about setting up joint research which may lead in future to locally made telecommunications equipment.
Thanks, colleagues. I trust we have answered most of your questions. If maybe there are points of clarity, we'll be happy to do that. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Dr. Mtuku. If I may, I think there's still a couple of them, particularly the asphalt one, which Zaid will take. But while I still have the floor, if I may, through you, Chair, I would like to speak to the work that we refer to, the AmbiFlow test. And the question was asked, where exactly in Tshwane are we doing this work? The data that was displayed was from work that we did in Mamelodi, but we are also currently still doing work in at Tanza Bopape and at Duck City.
Okay, can I ask staff to quickly respond?
Sorry, Chairperson, just one more question to CSIR.
Can I just ask the I think there are more questions. Can you please respond? Prof.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'll take the questions that were of a non-financial nature. The first one was about why do we host the South African Academy of Engineering for free. They're a very small organization. They have just one secretary. We give her a desk and provide her with an infrastructure. They get minimal funding from DST, so I think it's the least we could do for a sister organization. In terms of what do we do about raising public awareness about our activities, a number of interventions. The main one is through Quest Science magazine, where we try to translate the science for a public audience and publicize that as widely as possible. We also have public lectures that are open to the public, and we advertise them very, very widely. We have a database of about 12,000 people that we disseminate to. Our workshops that we host are open to the public. And then we have a Distinguished Visiting Scholars program where we invite those scholars to actually interact with science centers and schools at the specific request of the minister. How do we measure impact? We have a monitoring and evaluation framework that we follow, but we monitor the downloads of our reports and the usage, so we have a very good idea of what's being downloaded. We also monitor media reports, and then we follow up each of our reports with interviews with the target audience to see how they're being utilized. And then the very important question about why are we not audited in this way and yet our Act says something, there's still uncertainty about the manner in which ASIF should be audited, and we're still trying to sort that out. We are not a listed public entity, but our Act, the amendment to the Act does say we should abide by the PFMA. So because of the uncertainty in which Act takes precedence, we were not audited on the performance indicators, but we underwent the full other audit. In terms of the Treasury requirements, compliance, I think I'll leave that to Maura King. The AGM, we had about 60 to 70 members attending this year in Pretoria. I think that's in the building we have not sorted out. There's been no progress.
Thank you. With regard to the salary, I should state that the ASAF undertook benchmarking for the whole entity. And the outcome of that was that salaries for those whose salaries were benchmarked were backdated by 6 months. And therefore, the figure you see, it is not her salary. It is just that in that same period, there was an amount that was backdated for a particular period as a result of the benchmarking exercise. But otherwise, it was a number of staff members who were actually affected by this. With regard to how many staff does ASAF have, ASAF has a staff complement of 34. With regard to the deficit, it is very important that we live within our means, within what is available. And therefore, we have taken steps to make sure that we stick to what is available in this current financial year. We are going to do everything possible to avoid the deficit in this current financial year, because we cannot. We just cannot afford that. With regard to irregular expenditure, I must apologize that we didn't quantify the actual amount as to how much that is. But I must just give an overview of how that resulted. It was because of this requirement with regard to procurement that ASAF had to begin to comply with. And therefore, this had to do with the fact that we were procuring from service providers or suppliers from whom we were not necessarily requesting triple BEE certificates and tax clearance certificates, because it was not part of the requirement. Now, after with this, then, you know, it was expenses or payments to all those service providers was regarded as irregular. But now we have started with that, because ASAF didn't have a dedicated SCM considering the financial constraint, budgetary constraint that ASAF operates within. But I can confirm to members that from November last year, we had to put up a structure to manage our SCM process. It is not fully functional given the budgetary constraints because we cannot, you know, source that unit, unfortunately, at the moment. With regard to, yes, I've spoken to the steps taken to curb debt. Roseanne has already spoken about the building. I think that was all, unless if I've left out something.
I think you responded to all. I know that I've had this request that to avoid also fruitless expenditure, because if you miss your flight, you'll have to buy another ticket. So we can allow you to rush, because the flights are the 3 o'clock flight, 10 past 3 flight. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you very much.
If there is anything, we will do it in writing, and then and ask you to respond.
Why is there so many men and only one woman?
No, there are two women.
We need it in writing. The response. Honourable Member says, while HSRC is setting up, something to eat and come and sit down, and then so that you continue.
Okay. Have you sent the document to Michelle?
It's just been finished editing now, so yes. As soon as I get to the airport and connect, I'm not connected yet. I'll send it to Michelle.
Okay.
I'm good.
The industrialization one.
So you are asking me?
So the document we are bringing are not complete. They are meant to stimulate the financial sector. So hopefully, second investment.
And when are we doing the buyout? Now. The buyout is the next one, because the next one is the next one. Instead of the next one, it's